Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money at
Menards. Well, we get into a very in-depth interview with Romney Malco. Very interesting guy. So we'll listen to that. Good sports coming up after that interview. First, LifeLock. Cyber criminals, they're taking advantage of the pandemic, sending out all kinds of malware. Trying to scam people into cures, and they've even devised a counterfeit online pharmacy. People, it's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. You can miss certain identity threats if you're just monitoring your credit alone. You need LifeLock. It's 2020. Your info's out there. You're online. Everything is easier and convenient, but there's a bunch of bad people trying to steal your identity. So protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
If you become a victim of identity theft, LifeLock can help you restore your identity easier than what you can do on your own. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
Major League Baseball will finally start the summer this weekend, and there's no shortage of ways to get in on the action. BetOnline has all the odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. On the entertainment side, Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team in a segment called The Ice is Right, as he talks about his jewelry and gives you the chance to win some great prizes and bet on the cost of his bling. Visit BetOnline today to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. Don't forget to sign up and take advantage of all the Welcome Back to Sports bonuses. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code PODCAST1 for your sign-up bonus. Visit BetOnline and don't forget that promo code PODCAST1 for your sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Romney Malco's Birthday Cocktail Party for November 18th. Let's see who's invited. Owen Wilson. Megyn Kelly is here. Hey, everybody, it's Mike Epps. One of the Four Horsemen, Metallica guitarist Kirk Hammett. David Ortiz. It's Kevin Nealon. And from The Office, Adam Carolla's old stand-in, Oscar Nunez. Enjoy your party, Romney. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Not a bad birthday cocktail party.
I think I'm in damn good company right there.
Romney Malco is our guest. We were talking several years ago about this movie, Tijuana Jackson, Purpose Over Prison, which will be available on demand July 31st. He's making his directorial debut, also wrote it, edited the film, financed it himself. It was really a nice piece of work, man. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, dude. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you saying that. I put my heart and soul into it. And I have this problem with Hollywood. They always want to distinguish comedy and drama. And all my life, it's all been the same. It's all one and the same.
I'm glad you brought that up, Romney, because we all saw the movie, and I think we all enjoyed it. I certainly did. One of the things I liked about it best was you nailed a very difficult tone, which I imagine helps because you wrote and directed it, and you obviously know the material well, but like that tone where you're being funny. It's a comedy, but at the same time, there's some real like pathos there, you know what I mean? Like some truth and some real life in there, and that's a tricky tone to nail. You could easily teeter off that sort of fence either way, but yeah, I think you nailed it. Good job.
Yo, thank you very much. Every scene you ever see me do in any movie, that's what I'm wanting to do. I'm like, it doesn't have to be broad. Can't we just keep it real and make it funny at the same time? But I understand that, you know, every movie has its own, its different tone. And sometimes when you're wanting to sell a movie overseas, you want the comedy a bit broader because sure. they're, you know, non-English speaking audiences may pick up on that easier than necessarily some of these very community specific jokes.
But to Brian's point, it could have, if somebody else, if this movie would have been in the hands of somebody else, even if you still wrote it, it would have been a caricature. And not like, oh, wow, what, that guy's a character. No, that guy's a caricature. And to keep it away from just that kind of almost dehumanizing the character, really, it just made the movie wonderful.
You know, Dina, thank you. That really touches me. And that's really overall, if I were to say that the overall hope for this movie was to kind of help us develop more empathy. Just imagine if it was my job, if it were my job to write your story every single day and broadcast that to the world every single day or every single week. And each time you went outside of your house and you didn't live up to the image that I had broadcast for you, you were interpreted as a disappointment, or you were interpreted as a sellout, or better yet, maybe I depicted you as a threat. And so as a result of that, you were demonized. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what happens when you have people writing stories for you who've never really lived in your shoes or never experienced your community. And so I wanted to kind of show the world like a more authentic depiction of what I think it means to be human. And you might look at this character and see my brown skin, but I guarantee you, you got somebody in your family just like this dude, if not in yourself.
I'm glad Romney played the lead, because if Will Ferrell had did it, it would have been problematic, because there's about 157 N-bombs in there. And I think Will, especially in today's climate,
yeah,
I just feel like he's a lovable guy, but he's not untouchable.
Not the first couple you could let go.
Yeah.
That. No, you know, I don't even know, man. It's funny, though, because like that's the cult. Like, I'm that dude. This is horrible, but I'm that dude that was like, when I was growing up in the neighborhood, My friend's brother would get out of jail and nobody would want to hang with him. The system doesn't just ostracize you. Your family ostracizes you too. And I never had the heart to turn my back on dudes when they got out of jail. So I'd end up going on double dates. I had no business being on. I'd end up hanging out in places and dropping people off at places I had no business going. But through them, I kind of learned this empathy for this character. And that's how it really came about. You know what I mean? The dude that's dropping the N-bombs and like, he's so, it's the irony of someone who's institutionalized as him trying to tell you how to liberate yourself is just, that's all of us to me.
So
every American,
I've been through this process a couple of times. You raise money, write the script. It's a pretty thankless task. You don't do it for the money. I don't even know why you do it. You just do it because you had this idea and you want to see it executed, right? You want to see it, and then the shoots, especially when you're in every scene, the shoots are like super grueling, because it's the limited budget. Everyone thinks about it's about special effects or something, or hiring A-list actors. It's really about time. It's really about doing a 17-day shoot versus spreading it out over 2 months or whatever. How many days was the shoot?
18 days, bro. And can I tag in there?
Yeah.
Look, man, I completely understand that independent film, first and foremost, is you know, it's the most uncompromising form of artistic expression in film. I get that that's it. But I'm being real. I made this shit to tell a good story and to make money. And that was the reason that I set the price point that I set at. I set the price point where I set it, which was I didn't want to make a film for more than $500,000. And I was very blessed to be able to get Regina Hall, because she helped me package the film and make it attractive to investors. I was able to raise a lot of money through crowdfunding. And that's crowdfunding is probably harder than actually making a damn movie. And I went about it in a way to where I could use technology and really savvy people like my director of photography, and friends of mine who were editors that gave me advice on how to go about editing and different softwares and whatnot to make this film look like it was a $5-10 million film. And as a result of that, there was this ownership that I had, so that when I went about my distribution deal, I wasn't even beginning to consider giving up, you know, the lion's share of my film. And so, keeping it real, don't get me wrong, kudos to you, bro. But this dude right here, this black dude right here, he's trying to make money.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I sort of gave up on the making money part of the making films part at some point. At some point in my career, but you know, I make money doing other things, and I like the films because they're permanent. You know, I've always felt like all the talking just kind of went up into the ether and disappeared. But the films, that's something you can leave behind, or a book, or something like that. And so, speaking of books, I feel like you might have a book in you. Are you thinking about a book? I mean, you have a lot. I mean, your character obviously is a character, but there's a lot of reality there. There's a lot of real advice there. And so you wrote the script. What about the book or a book?
Yeah. The character's written a book. It's called Tijuana. It's called Prison Logic. It's an ebook. It'll be available. It's around here somewhere. I guarantee you'll see it pop up soon. There's a part of me that has always considered writing a book, but to be honest with you, I'm always torn between whether or not I'm actually writing a book about my life. I'm one of the black dudes in America who's probably been pulled over by police officers 350 times by the time he was like 40. Right.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a few places. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I grew up in Laurelton, Queens. I grew up in Baytown, Texas, and off and on in the Caribbean as well.
How did that work with the Caribbean?
It was good because the Caribbean, you know, my family's Trinidadian, right? So I'm the first American born in my family. And so the blessing of being able to go to school from time to time in Trinidad or go live in Trinidad from time to time, I was afforded with the luxury of being able to look at the United States from the outside in rather than from the inside out. And believe it or not, man, you know, when you're born into this country and you don't know anything else, you're really, you know, especially if you're from a disenfranchised community. And the reason I say disenfranchised community, because you're looking at a brother who has lived and grown up in trailer parks. Okay. So when you come from a disenfranchised community, you're kind of born into a glass ceiling. It's like you pop out the womb, and the minute you pop your head back to cry, you hit a glass ceiling. And then this indoctrination continues throughout your schooling system and the lack of resources within your community and just the dialogue that you are, that, you know, that you hear just due to where you are, where you sit on the, you know, on the class system.
The pecking order.
And so I didn't have that, because in the Caribbean, it's kind of different, where people are just kind of regarded as people and actually excited to see people. And then the majority of people look like me. And so we sat around televisions to celebrate people who look like us. So in my mind, I'm looking at that shit and being like, oh, that's going to be me one day. Whereas I grew up with people here who sat down and gathered around a television to watch Dynasty and didn't see any reflection of themselves in any of those characters.
No, I know. I mean, even as a white guy, I grew up watching Love Boat and Dynasty and all that shit. I was like, who are these people with luggage? Like, I would marvel, and he's getting on the boat, and he's got suitcases, and they match. Like, they're matching suitcases. I had a fucking pillowcase. Like, nobody had. It was. I just looked at all of it. All of it seemed bizarre to me. I was just poor. I was white, obviously. I remain white. Think I'm taking it to the grave. Not
keep
sure.
Keeping
it real.
But your skin regime is working, though, bro. I don't know if you got a filter or something going, but that skin regime is. Hey.
But I did still, as a super poor person, I did look at these people like they were from different worlds. You'd see commercials where people pulled out a credit card and swiped the credit card, or went on, or, you know, the Brady Bunch would go to Hawaii. And it was like, what is this? Who goes to Hawaii? It seems like you're living in two different worlds.
Two different Americas, man. I'm telling you, I went back to that trailer park like not too long ago, one of the trailer parks that I lived in not too long ago. And it's just kind of like, damn, you know, a lot hadn't changed. It's as if these places are, they can be extremely transient, right? So maybe people come there and it's a stepping stone and they move up. But, you know, a lot of it was the same, and a lot of the people were the same too, man. And so I really do empathize with that as well. It's like that experience was different, but in some ways similar to what I experienced living in the projects, you know what I mean? And so what I'm basically trying to communicate here is that if we could understand us as humans a little bit better and understand ourselves a little bit better and put a little less faith in conventional media, you know, I think that we actually have a better chance of making even the most, you know, even the poorest communities just a bit more pleasant to live in. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of a part of the message in the movie as well.
So where are you right now?
Right now I'm in Florida. And the reason I'm in Florida, I'm going to make it clear, because according to the governor, it's the only place that has not been affected by COVID-19. And I have a family to worry about, you know? I don't want to expose them to what's going on with the rest of America.
Are you in Florida full time?
No. I actually live in Vancouver, British Columbia.
You're living the dream.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I do a show called A Million Little Things for ABC, and mm-hmm. it films there. Mm-hmm. So we're going on our third. I just feel judged.
I love that place. No, it's such a great place. I mean, real estate there has to be more than the Bay Area. I mean, I think it's probably on par with Tokyo or something. Like it is crazy how expensive that place is, but it's such a great combination of, I don't know, sun and sea, and there's that whole trail. I went there for Jimmy's bachelor party, I think. I went there for a couple of Mike August's bachelor. I think I went there for a couple of bachelor parties, and it's just the goddamn best, man. And I've done some shows there and stuff. It's just, I don't know, whatever they got it right.
I agree. I think that, you know, there's a couple of things that I've noticed. One is, like you said, the beautiful, you've got nature, but you've got metropolis. Mm-hmm. The quality of food is unreal. The emotional intelligence, surprisingly high. But also it's a different type of diversity where we take our kid to a park and no one speaks English at the park, but you're hearing Tigrinya, you're hearing Farsi, you're hearing Spanish, you're hearing people speaking Slovakian, you're hearing
Chinese.
Different Chinese dialects. It's really diverse. And we enjoy that. We actually find it fun. In fact, we spend our summers at Robson Square, where they have salsa for 3 hours every Saturday at Robson Square in Vancouver, you know, because, you know, my family's pretty much all predominantly Black, Indian, and Latino. So
salsa dancing. Sorry, not the
and sign. Delicious salsa.
And yeah. Not the chips.
Yeah, that's kind of
maybe.
You know, it's an interesting sociological thing. People used to go out and they would dance. They'd just go out dancing, like couples would go out dancing. You know, now couples stay in and they watch shit, or they stay in and they answer emails or something. But it used to be a time in this country, and in a lot of countries, I guess, where an average couple might just go out dancing, take her out dancing on a Saturday night. It's hard to be depressed when you're dancing. It's hard to have a bad night when you're dancing. It must release so much of whatever is bottled up in you physically, but emotionally and kind of spiritually as well. It seemed like we'd be better off if we got back to a little bit of dancing. I'm not talking about the strip club twerking or whatever, which is fine. But I mean, like, as a nation, like going out on a weekend and going dancing.
And foxtrot a little bit.
Yeah, sounds simple, but yes, that must be nice.
My daughter and I have been working out a salsa routine, and I have to say that it's a bit therapeutic, man. You do have a point. And we're dancing. When we do the salsa weekend in Robson Square, we're dancing in broad daylight. And there's something to that, too, where you're dancing and the sun's out. That's actually really beautiful. And you can, in the city, there's these mountains, and behind that, the beautiful backdrop of the city. It's gorgeous. Hey, man.
Jean-Claude Van Damme's out on his balcony judging from his high rise. Oh, yeah, he's in town. Yeah, well, think about what you do when you're team scores the winning touchdown, or you win the lottery, or you find out that you were picked for the promotion. It's like you dance, like you sell. That's what you do. You do a touchdown dance, or you do a crazy. I mean, if you take a look at folk who are watching the Super Bowl, when their team scores with 4 seconds left, guys who don't dance get up and do a version of a dance. So maybe a little more of that. Maybe we should reintroduce that.
I'm in favor of some dancing. I think I remember being in a yoga class that would make us gyrate our hips at the beginning of the class.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, yo, you can't take yourself too seriously after you've done a few of those.
You should do. Hey, have you been asked to do Dancing with the Stars?
I haven't, but they wouldn't invite me because I'd kill that shit. I'd
kill it wouldn't be fair.
Same thing, and I was eliminated in week number four. But no, but it was weird. I'm not a dancer, obviously. If you watch the show, I don't have any ability. But for the time I was doing it, I was having to train 2-3 hours a day, trying it with a professional partner, and. Yeah. It was like a pretty interesting time in your life. Like, it's hard to be bummed out. It's hard to get fat. It's hard to complain. You're just dancing the whole time. You're sweating your ass off. And all you're doing is trying to sort of remember the next move or to perfect this. And of course, I wasn't any good, but it's a very super cathartic physical. It's a great combo of the sort of cathartic and the physical kind of coming together. And it would be pretty therapeutic. Like, it would probably solve more problems. You know how we do that thing where we go, turns out all the people that are all the serotonin reuptake inhibitors and all the medications, all that. It turns out science says if you just go for a hike in nature and listen to classical music, that it ups your dopamine levels and it lowers your whatever. I bet dancing would have an even greater effect if you took a bunch of kids that were hyper this or hooked on that or couldn't have this, you know, or Asperger's or whatever it is. And you went, you're going to fucking take a dance class for an hour a day. I bet 100%. It would fix so many things in our society.
100%. Let me tell you something. The minute my daughter became a teenager, things in the house changed. And Gina, maybe you can help me out. I don't know, but I don't even know what to say. She got a boyfriend and whatnot, and I'm like, I don't even know how to communicate, much less look her in the eye.
Yeah.
And I figured out that dancing was a way for us to bond. Without her feeling interrogated, and without me having to think about her boyfriend, and
you're that's probably a time where I would imagine she feels like a kid again, and not like a teenager with an attitude who's always on the defense. She can just be a kid with her dad.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, she and I seemed quite proud the other day. Showing my dance routine to my brother and my nieces and nephews. So. I think it's paying off, but man, you've got a point. I don't know when she feels like she's just a girl with her dad. I honestly don't know. I'm actually, let me drop some bombs for y'all real quick. Go. I'm a stepfather.
Oh, you're a stepfather.
I'm a stepfather of two. I'm going on 6 years of being in these kids' lives, right? My son is 10 years old. My daughter is about to be 17. But one step further, just found out that I'm having a child.
Wow.
My first,
I officially have a baby mama.
What?
Okay.
How old is
congratulations.
Your... Wait a minute. Let me figure this out. You have your stepdad. Mm-hmm. The 10 and 17 are the age of the stepkids. Mm-hmm. Do you have biological kids before this?
Nope. This is my first baby mama.
And are you going to adopt and is that how it works with the step? Stepdad can adopt the kids.
Well,
right?
If the biological dad gives up the kids.
Yeah.
The biological dads are giving up their kids because me and the biological dads are tight.
Oh, wow.
But they love their kids. You know what I mean? It's two biological dads at that.
And so how old? And now the baby mama, are you married?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
You're looking. Oh, does she know?
No.
And so I'm guessing she's a little younger than you if she's pregnant.
Oh, Absolutely. You know, I mean, one of the things I take into consideration when we first met, you know, everybody was like, that's a lot to take on. You know, she's got two kids, blah, blah, blah. But a couple of things that made me gravitate to her was that, one, she was younger. So if I eventually wanted to have a child, that it would still be an option. But the other part of it was that it's just rare that I find someone who actually has a clear and distinct sense of purpose. So she knew exactly how she wanted to serve in the world. And I feel like that's just some of the best therapy you can get. And then I wouldn't have someone who was younger depending on me for a lifeline. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What is your girlfriend, fiance, soon to be wife? What is her business or what does she do?
Pole dancer. I'm kidding. she's a speech therapist for kids with special needs.
Oh, wow.
Ah. And so you like that. I mean, you like that sort of giving back or that sort of that
being of service.
I think, if you look at the movie, if you look at Tijuana Jackson, Purpose of a Prison, you know, it all kind of falls into this thing where this is not just, you know, it's not just hyperbole, but, you know, science is actually showing there and psychological fact. It's that when you're of service, you tend to be happier. If you read Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, you know, one of the things that kept people going was figuring out ways to be of service while in Auschwitz.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. You know, it just kind of made me think about how much of our man and woman and how much of our thoughts and actions compete with one another. Like, I've always known that going to bed at 10 o'clock and waking up at 6 a.m. would be the best schedule ever. But I go to bed at 1:45 and I wake up at 9:15 pissed off and I can't fucking get it. I can't do it. I know it. It's like, you know, being of service, you know, you'll be your most satisfied and your most at ease and your most content if you'd go down on a Saturday and don't, you know, donate your time down at the soup kitchen or the homeless, right, whatever. But you still are fucking watching you porn on your computer and getting into a fucking Twitter war with someone who thinks differently than you. And
not at the soup kitchen, Adam.
Clam chowder's the special today, boys. The point is like, you know what works. You just won't fucking do it.
But
some people will.
Some people will. And look, but I want to come to you with something about this going to bed early. I know we're just jumping around, but I read this book that was given to me by one of my co-stars on A Million Little Things, and it's called The Power of When. And this doctor's been studying the circadian rhythms for 22 years. And he's broken it down into categories. You have the bear, you have the lion, you have the dolphin. And
We've had him on.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Bruce.
Dr. Bruce. I think he's got a point to some shit. And I stopped beating myself up for the hours that I choose to be awake and the hours that I choose to be asleep. But I kind of try to model my life around it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does, and maybe I'm just upset that I'm not a bear or a lamb or
a
platypus or whatever it is, but those morning people, those people that just can't make it past 10 p.m. and can't, you know those assholes, you know the biggest asshole in the world, I go, what time do you get up during the week? And they go, it's 6 a.m. And they go, what about on Saturdays and Sundays? 6:15, 6:20. Yeah, I don't know. I can't really sleep. I can sleep till 4 in the fucking afternoon on a Sunday. This notion of these people who just get up, and it's always, by the way, it's the best time to get shit done between like 6 and 10 a.m. And between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m., you get nothing done. You fucking drink and yell at the TV set. Like, there's nothing good that happens in that window. And it's such a productive window, that early morning, before everyone's gotten up and all that. Sorry.
Let me ask you a question. Do you have kids?
Yes. Twins.
Oh, twins. Okay. How old are your twins?
14.
Okay. Do you remember how much shit you got done when they were much younger?
Yeah. I still get a lot done because I've farmed out everything, you know, nannies and square footage and all that kind of shit. So, but yes, it's easier because, you know, it's just weird shit. Like, my son came into the office. He came to my office last night and he said, I got an invention, but I couldn't draw it, but it has to do with a car. Let me show you on your car. And I was like, okay. And I had to go down and stand in the garage while he was demonstrating his invention for a car on my car. And yeah, you got to get up and you got to go move around a little bit. And, you know, the daughter will show up and go like, me and my friends want to go to Malibu. Can we go? And, you know, next thing you know, you're all piled into it and your Rihanna's cranking. They just crank crazy. By the way, crazy fucking music. Yes.
That comes back to purpose. It's kind of like it's fulfilling, though. And like, you know, one of the things, and I know it sounds like I'm marketing my movie here, but it's true, though, that in the story, Tijuana Jackson's movie, he's explaining the difference between, he's demonstrating, he's living the difference between achieving things versus achieving fulfillment. And you got to say, cramming the kids in the car and taking them to friggin' Malibu is fulfilling.
It's
the timing is never right, but it's fulfilling.
It's funny. I mean, I take my daughter and maybe four of her friends, put them in the car, do a like 10 o'clock sometimes at night bonsai run where we go from our house over to Jimmy's house on the west side and drive down Sunset Strip and everything. And all they do is crank the most obnoxious music you've ever heard in your life. But it fits really well into what you're doing, and the girls are just like rocking out. And I can't talk on my phone or do anything because all they do is crank it up. And it's like, oh, I'm trying to think. I mean, it's all the boy band stuff. It's all the rap stuff. It's all the everything. It's all Harry Styles, you know. And they just crank it, and it's weird. So you're like, you're captive. It's you're going to be in this world for over an hour because by the time it's and there is no talking and there is no I'm going to call Mike August and talk business on my phone while they laugh it up in the back. There's nothing else to do but be in this world. And but there's a part of it that's strangely satisfying, and it'll be a memory of theirs as well.
Agreed. And you're just at that time, you're just basically a chauffeur for a rock band, female rock right. band. Just go with it. Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I agree. It is strangely satisfying. You know, my little man, he's on the spectrum. He wakes me up and he's like, Daddy, boom, boom, boom. It's time to do this, time to do that. And it's routine for him. Even when he brushes his teeth, it's like, yo, it got this little routine that we do where it's like A, E, I, O, U. And he insists that that happens at the same time every day. And in this weird way, I'm actually more productive because of the structure that he insists upon.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's true. And also, you know, it's not like I was ever doing anything at 10 o'clock anyway. I'm just fucking watching The Love Boat, like a rerun of The Love Boat in my office. Like, so why not get and crank up the Harry Styles? And also, it's kind of nice. You know, you grew up, we grew up, we all grew up with the, I don't know, sometimes the uptight parents or the depressed parents or the angry parents or the angry friends' parents. You know, we all had the parents of our friends and the guy was an asshole and uptight and angry and weird about you. Take your shoes off before you come in. You know, whose shoes are these? You know, like weirdo parent. And it's also it's kind of fun to be cool dad, you know, cool parent, fun person. Crank it up. Let's have some fun. Like I was literally, when we were coming back home to my house, at some point when the music was rocking, I got the SUV rocking too. So I was kind of doing a swim move with the SUV, and the girls were in the back. Wow, woohoo! They're like going nuts. I was going woo, oh, hitting rough seas, you know. And it's just like have a little fucking fun. Life's cool, short. Man. Why not create a little memory?
And you follow that up with maybe you and the wife doing a little dancing. As far as I'm concerned, that's a complete day. That's the best. That's better than therapy.
You said your son, the 10-year-old, mm-hmm. was on the spectrum.
Yes.
What is he? Autism? Is that what that means?
He's autistic. Yeah. Well, the spectrum covers a lot of things.
Yeah.
My son, particularly, is a fairly high functioning autistic.
And so how does that manifest itself beside the schedule thing you were talking about?
For him, his probably his only real issue is two issues is anxiety and communication. So his ability to comprehend is incredible when he wants to, right? And so we have to figure out ways to incentivize him. But that seems to me to be pretty typical with any kid. And then the other side of it was getting him to communicate how he's feeling and having the confidence to communicate it. And over the last 5 years, I can't even tell you, it is night. Honestly, sometimes I'm like, will you just shut up? Right? Because now he talks all the time. He's always singing out loud and he's laying into the notes. When with your friends the backyard again. And that's just, and it's just a repetition. It's called stimming. Like he's doing it. It's a method that for him to manage his anxiety and stress. And so for the most part, what I have found, I'm like his worst nightmare. I came into his life. I've got a military background. I came into his life and basically insisted on structure, insisted on consequences. And so I thought that he would be, I'd be the person that he hated, but I'm probably his best friend in the world because with me, he doesn't have these extreme spikes of anxiety. And then these extreme lows usually follow. It's just things kind of stay within a certain, you know,
because he knows what to expect.
He knows what, you know what? Thank you.
Yeah, consistency, man. Yeah. And structure, you know, it's
you
so.
You want to come talk to the family, Gene?
I'd love to.
It's so funny. I mean, young boys especially, they need structure and they fight against it. So you think they don't want it, but they need it. And there's a difference between what they want and what they need, because they definitely don't want it, but they need it on a cellular level. And I always, I had no structure. My family was out of control, and it led to, there's no worse feeling than feeling like your family's out of control when you're 7 or 8 years old. Like it causes a lot of anxiety. There was no structure. We didn't eat at a certain time, you know, wasn't, you know, like when the street lights would come on and everyone else would go home and have dinner, we wouldn't have dinner. We didn't have, there was no structure to my family. Right. And I hated it. So I craved playing Pop Warner football, and Pop Warner football was all structure. It was just old coaches yelling at you, yelling, do pushups, win sprints. You know, it was the military. And I never thought about it, but after, you know, I think the third year I played, I broke my shoulder at a horrible injury and I was out for the season. I never missed a practice. I showed up every single practice with a cast on my arm and just stood next to the coaches, which was insane if you think about a 10-year-old, because when you're 10 and you have a horrible injury and you're out for the entire, I hurt myself in preseason, was out for the entire season. You could see that 10-year-old like going to the games, like in the windbreaker. I went to every single practice. And I now, as I look back on it, it's because that's where the structure was. Home was chaos.
Understood. And you know what, dude? You made me realize something. Now, I always knew that I wanted to be a rapper. That's how I started, right? I wanted to be a rapper. And I was pretty confident that I could be successful at it, but not confident enough to just go balls to the wall out of high school. And I definitely wasn't, you know, like a scholar. I wasn't academically inclined in any way. And so I joined the military. And up until now, I always kind of thought of it as, well, you know, I wasn't confident, but I believed that I needed some kind of fallback plan. And the military presented itself as that. But now that I'm listening to you, I realize that I was actually pretty conscious of the fact that I had absolutely no structure in my life. And I knew that it was necessary for me in order to attain the things that or achieve the things I wanted to achieve. And part of the reason I actually joined the military, now that you make me think of it, is because of that. I needed to learn structure. And it actually worked. It really helped.
Well, you need it. I always think about Dr. Drew when he talks about a syndrome where like people don't have enough nutrients or a certain nutrient in their body. They'll like crave dirt. And, because it has it in
iron
dirt. Or it could be, and it could be other.
Chalk.
Or charcoal briquettes or something. But there's a thing in nature that when you need this, you're not getting enough of this and your body needs it, it will figure out a way just to go eat dirt or go do eat that or do it just to get it into your body, because your body's sort of telling you, I need this. And so, you know, you going into the military and me playing Pop Warner football and all that, it was like
with a broken arm.
It was insane because I had such a horrific injury that people thought I was going to be like disfigured. Like they thought my arm wouldn't grow back normally, or I would have arthritis. They had a lot of thoughts about how bad this injury was when I was 11. You know, it was a freak injury. And when the next year rolled around, everyone said, well, you're not going to play. You're not playing anymore because of your freakish injury, right? And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm playing. And everyone would keep coming to me like I was nuts. Like they would go, I remember my cousin Greg went like, you had a horrible injury. You were taken off in an ambulance and blah, blah, blah. How can you go back and play? And I was like, what do you mean? Of course I'm playing. Like, I don't, why are you even asking this? And my parents said, you can't play anymore. And I said, fuck you. And I ended up playing. And as I look back on it now, that was another craving for structure. The word I was thinking of is like minerals. Like there's minerals your body misses and you'll eat. But me going to play that football after the horrible injury was my minerals. I was like, I'm playing. It didn't strike me. It didn't even strike me as taking a chance. It was like, I need this structure. And if I don't have it, I'm going to wither away and die in this family.
And to be fair, honestly, I barely noticed the arm. It's, I wouldn't call it
it's a little shorter. If I wear a suit, it'll hang out a little further on the one sleeve.
Yeah.
No, I had other injuries, but never that shoulder, and it ended up being fine. And it was a good thing I went back. But yeah, back to kids, especially boys, they need that structure. And if you think about what's going on in the zeitgeist of America now, and we're kind of getting rid of the structure part of life, and it's scary for young boys. I mean, all that stuff, all the Cub Scouts and the military and Pop Warner football and all the stuff that's sort of going away, it was there for a reason.
You know, you said something, though, that was pretty interesting, which is that with this broken arm, you still went and stood next to the coaches during every single practice. And you know what? It speaks to the time, too, because we didn't have all the video games and the distractions and the phones and the smartphones that people had now. So in some ways, right, that might have been your social life. That might have been your activity. You know, at least it was for me. We were out riding bikes and mowing lawns and making money to go buy ice cream and all that stuff. And like today, I feel as though, you know, we're constantly being inundated with all this media and different options for screens, to where maybe that sounds absurd now that you actually took your broken arm ass, almost disfigured ass, and went and stood next to the coach. But when you put yourself in that time, it doesn't really seem that far-fetched. And the fact that you needed that structure, to me, it kind of actually makes sense.
I do remember to have two weird snapshots of that era. I remember a good friend of mine, I think his name was Muhammad Cobb, or I think it was Muhammad Cobb.
What is Cobb? I'm listening to you.
He was a brother, and I think you can look him up, Max. But his name was Muhammad Cobb, and he was a kind of a badass. But we were good friends. We're both kind of troublemakers, and he signed up, but he used to miss a lot of practices. And I didn't. And at some point, I was hanging out with him, and his mom screamed at him, Adam's got a fucking broken shoulder, and he hasn't missed a practice. He's not even playing. You're fucking able-bodied. You're not even there. And I remember that clearly. And I also remember Mr. Kramer, who was Eric Kramer's dad, who ended up going to the NFL, playing those years, I think, with the Detroit Lions and Minnesota Vikings. Kramer played for a few teams. But I remember the best compliment I ever heard is I was just walking around after the game, and Coach Kramer pointed at me with like my sling in my arm, and he was saying to the other coach after the game, he goes, this is our best player right here. He just hurt. And I remember going, wow, that was the best thing that was the best thing I ever heard. Yeah.
Heart goes a long way, bro.
Hamed? It wasn't Mohammed. It was Hamed Cobb.
How would you think you spell Cobb?
Hamed Cobb. I think it was H-O-M-E-D. D and then COBB. I met him.
You're going to go for him, Ed?
Try
and spell it.
I don't know. I think that's how you spell it. I met him. He was on a corner of my Colfax Elementary, and his bike had a flat tire. And I walked up to him, and I said, "Oh, hey, looks like you got a flat tire." And he looked at me, and he went, "Yeah, no shit." I remember thinking,
best friends for life.
I remember like, no, I like this 11-year-old, and we hung out for a while. I don't know. I think he ended up in St. Louis and maybe in prison, but that's what I remember.
Hamed Cobb.
Yeah. Yeah.
The name.
I know it's weird. It's weird when you get older and these weird names from your teams and your schools and stuff just come popping into your head, right? For like no reason. Sometimes at night.
Yeah, and the name Hamed Cobb would have meant nothing to me then, but today, thinking of the name Hamed Cobb, there's so much more to it. It's like it's like a dot on a map with all these tentacles, and you kind of want to know where these tentacles go, bro. You know, and I just because it's like getting more exposed and you live more, you just become curious. We're looking up my name the other day. We're looking up our last names, and my last name Malco, it means he who lives like a king.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I kind of knew that.
It sounds like a law firm that specializes in malpractice lawsuits. Like, welcome to Malco. What happened? Well, after the surgery, the guy forgot to pull the scalpel out. So he actually showed me up with the clamp still in there.
He left his watch in my stomach.
You've come to the right place.
100 times.
Malco got me $530,000.
That's right.
Then there's Malco Theaters out in like Minneapolis or Minnesota. Yeah,
oh, there is.
Malco Theaters.
All right. Let me hit a spot here. True Niagen. I've been taking cellular health vitamin True Niagen for a few months now. It's probably coming more like 6 months now. As we get older, our bodies experience a near 50% decline in NAD, which negatively affects the health and the cells of our bodies. Lifestyle stressors like intense exercise, lack of sleep, stress on the immune system, overeating also deplete NAD. Cells expend more energy to function, and NAD is, well, I'll put it to you this way. I'm leaving town, and I was packing up my kit, and the first thing I did was pack up my True Niagen because I never forget to take this stuff. Dr. Drew takes it as well. Backed by a Nobel Prize winning scientist in clinical research, global regulatory approvals, it is the real deal. Support cellular energy and defense. Visit TRUNIAGEN.com. Use the code Adam. Get $20 off any 3 month plus supply until and through July 31st, which is coming up. So let's get going. But it's good stuff. True Niagen. All right. Romney Malco. I really love this film. It had a lot of comedy. I don't know why. I loved it when you were spelling your name to the person on the phone and you said J as in Jamiroquai, I believe, which just, I don't know, made me laugh.
I like Thanks, the profound man. Message you told about it's not the size of the ass.
Is Hamed Cobb now a fabricator, welder that you can find?
I mean, the only one that I found is, and yeah, he's from North Hollywood, went to El Camino Real.
Wow.
And, is he in the St. Louis area?
There's not too much. I'm on his private Facebook. I don't want to give away too much.
All right. Did he do any time?
There are some legal disputes that are available on the internet.
All right.
Legal disputes.
Well, that sounds like Hamed.
I'll show you his picture after the show if you want.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
y'all might be linking up again.
Yeah, be nice. His mom was Foxy. I kind of remember.
Hey.
Yeah, that's Hamed Cobb. Yeah,
y'all might need to roll in and do like another. There might be like I'm thinking I'm sensing like a man show reprise now. You and Hamed just killing it.
Well, now that Kimmel's too good, shit
too
doesn't stink. I'll get Hamed in there. The movie Tijuana Jackson: Purpose Over Prison. It's available on demand July 31st. It's a really good piece of work. Support it, please. TijuanaJackson.com is where you can go. Yeah, that looks like Hamid's doing some welding. Dallas, Addison, Improv tonight and tomorrow night, doing stand-up shows there, live podcast there as well. Still probably some tickets to the early show. I think the late show is going to be sold out, but early show, if you left. I'm your emotional support animal. My book is out, available. Go get it, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all that. Get the audio book at Audible as well. And just go to adamcarolla.com for everything you need. Romney, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was good to see all of y'all. Thank you very much, Adam. I really appreciate you having me on and letting people know about my movie. I'm very proud of it.
You should be. It's a great piece of work. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Romney Malco and Gina and Bald saying mahalo.
Stick around. Adam Carolla and Dave Damaschek return for Good Sports right after this.
The Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to the Friday edition of Good Sports. Dave Damaschek here. Adam Carolla over there. Ace, move over, March Madness. It's just about here. August Augustness. Is that a good? Now that seems like too much of a tribute to Mike August, though.
Yeah,
we need a good name for that. You know, August. We're going to have just about everything, and football will be waiting for us on the other side of the month of August. But in the meantime, we're going to get to bide our time with baseball, basketball, hockey, and more.
When are they starting? When does basketball start? I know everyone's practicing.
Gary, if you could check, look at that. I'm not sure the exact date on that. The puck drops. This is going to be heaven. It for anybody who likes it, and even people who don't, because we've been stuck in our houses for so long. Beggars can't be choosers. We'll watch just about anything, as golf has proven this summer. Not disparaging golf, but the there's been rare focus on the sport this summer. But hockey's going to be five games a day, Ace. You got to get into it now. This
really?
Is, if you are ever going to do it, they're going to be five games. It's really going to be like March Madness. I mean, they're going to be five games, and our time, I believe, they start on the Pacific time zone. I think they start 10 a.m. and the games will go to like 10:30 at night, and there'll be five of them.
The NBA is coming back as you listen this coming Thursday. That'd be July 30th.
Do you have the picture of Nellie Olson in the Vikings mascot?
Yes.
We must get to that from a few days back. Mm-hmm. Gary's.
Talking about the Vikings logo. You made an interesting discovery there.
Well, it's the same hair. That's all I'm saying.
Same person, just about. Slap a
got the same
Fu Manchu on her.
Yeah, really got the same jawline as well.
I'm surprised there weren't more testosterone-y people up in the Twin Cities to say, like, we can't have a football logo that has long blonde hair like a chick. Right? I'm surprised that there wasn't that group out there back in the day.
She looks like if Barry Manilow was gayer. All right. Well, we'll put that up. Where will we put that up?
It'll be on our social media. Just follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Well, James Von Prague and Larry Zonka, and now this. And then a Chris Carter and Godzuki. I mean, the hits just keep coming.
I was just going to say that was one of your better observations too. All right, Ace, let's pick up just to talk some football, just to, you know, get back. We've been talking about social issues as they apply to sports and beyond and everything else. Let's talk about some actual sports and stuff where you can throw your money around. I was looking at the Bet Online site. Who do you think's going to win the MVP this year? Let's start there. That's a fun conversation, I think.
In the NFL.
In the NFL, of course.
I think, is it Deshaun? Who's the quarterback for the Ravens? Is it
for the Ravens, Lamar Jackson?
Oh, Lamar, yeah, not Deshaun. That's the Texans.
You buy that he can make it another year? I mean, I'm not trying to put a cap on his career, but how long? He's not going to get broken.
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, you know, I've eliminated defensive players. I've eliminated many interior offensive linemen. There's a couple.
Some of the voters.
Yeah, and Henry, you know, running back, maybe. You know, you never know if somebody, some older guy like, you know, Breeze or Tom Brady Rodgers. It's like, I don't know, like one of the old guard guys could have a real standout season. But I think I like Russell Wilson a lot. I think that guy is a winner.
He is. I always say it. Not since John Elway. People love to talk about it. It's a team sport. And I always like to talk about QB wins and how much you win the Super Bowl should have some impact on whether or not you go to the Hall of Fame. I like when people want to argue with me about that as though it doesn't matter how you play in January. No, but he had great stats in October. Like, well, that's not exactly the measure of a season, is it? But the top guys are Patrick Mahomes, not surprisingly.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson, as you say. Dak Prescott's way up there. The guy who Russell Wilson, though, is like John Elway in that, I mean, those Broncos teams that got the Super Bowls were really mediocre, if not downright lousy, if you take John Elway and just put a league average quarterback in there. Russell Wilson is that. It's a weird thing. Russell Wilson somehow is underappreciated.
Yes.
I don't know how that could possibly be, but he's on, you know, goes to Pro Bowls, gets paid well, everybody, but still somehow is a little underrated, and I'm with you about that. If they win that division, I think you're probably right about that. What's interesting too, that now we're here and football's almost happening. Tom Brady, I can't believe he left the Patriots, and what's going to happen to them, and Cam Newton and everything else. What if 43? I don't care how good the players are around him. What if 43-year-old Tom Brady really does get to the Super Bowl in Tampa, by the way, this year, which is where the Super Bowl is?
Oh my God.
I guess what would we think? He's still the best quarterback of all time, but it really would be quite a feat if he at this age got to the Super Bowl.
You know, I was thinking right before you brought him up about Cam Newton. What if Cam Newton wouldn't have to statistically break any records or even statistically be the best in the league? Cam Newton could probably be the fourth best quarterback statistically, but the story would be so cool that he could be an MVP.
Yeah, although then I think it would be interesting because, yeah, simultaneously, you would then need Tom Brady to plummet. No, wait, was that right? Because the Belichick would get a lot of credit.
If the Patriots are good,
Belichick's going to get outsized credit.
You need Cam Newton's numbers to be better than Brady, but it could be lower than Russell Wilson's, but the story could be better. I don't know. Maybe that's comeback player of the year, but I could see him getting an MVP based partially on the story versus the stats.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll go with, since you asked, I'll go with not Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that's an easy answer, of course. I feel like what the math that works out nicely is for Kyler Murray down there in the desert playing for the Arizona Cardinals, because their defense is not going to be mighty. And that means that they're going to be in shootouts. And then that means big statistics for Kyler Murray. And he's young, so he'll be able to run around and put up big rushing yards and everything else. And they got DeAndre Hopkins, in case you haven't been paying attention to pro football during the age of 19. They now have one of the three best wide receivers in the NFL added to an already talented receiver group there. I think that's a great bet, and you can get him right now at relatively decent odds. You get him at plus 1200, I guess, here on Bet Online. But that's Dave's choice for MVP this year. Smart play.
What's the over under on Rams wins? I thought it'd be like 10.5, but you think it's
really
lower?
I don't know. I guess like where that requires that you really believe in the boy genius, Sean McVay's ability.
Sorry,
to
nine.
Update
them. Nine.
I was going to say
nine wins.
There, I'm sorry. Nine, that's where it opened. Week. It is now dropped to eight.
Eight wins. 500.
Over under.
I don't know. I feel like Rams getting over. I mean, they were in the Super Bowl a year and a half ago, for Christ's sake.
I kind of agree with those kind of era things. Like if you dip a little bit, don't judge too harshly on that. If the core is still there, I don't know about their offensive line being very good though. And that's a big thing with him. Like we talked about yesterday, Jared Goff's just one of those guys. Like, you got to keep him clean. He can't be You know, he's not Russell Wilson or Ben Roethlisberger, one of those guys. When the play breaks down, who still makes a play? It's got to be a clean pocket for him and everything else. They're interesting. I think that division, though, is really tough when you think about Seahawks are good every year since Pete Carroll's been there pretty much. I think the Cardinals are going to be okay. And the Niners were in the Super Bowl last year. It's hard to pick who's the last place team in that division almost.
It is. Just got to believe that get over 500, but maybe that's just wishful thinking. All right, Chip.
Who comes in?
Bring
who
it home. You, yes.
Go oh, ahead. Well, no, fine. No, go I'm excited talking go pro ahead. Football. No, I don't want to. No, now I don't want to, Adam. See how it feels?
Yeah, it doesn't feel good.
All right, listen. I know you're hitting the road here, so safe travels to you out there. Looking forward to kibitzing more and more about actual games and such here, Ace. It's an exciting time. Sports are just about back. Looking forward to yapping with you next week. Until then, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek, good sports out.
Good sports. No!
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up Adam's new book, I Am Your Emotional Support Animal. Get all the links at adamcarolla.com.